So welcome back to part two of Tuesday Live with Linda and Friends on the 4th of October. So I'm going to, Razia, look, let's just enjoy this moment. Look at this beautiful face. So I'm going to screen share this video with you. And it's such a pleasure for me to participate in these summits with the Feldenkrais. It's not too late. There are so many, I think 59 incredible talks. And I'm just over, whenever I want an inspiration, I'm going to look at because they're really interesting, really wonderful from many, many speakers from around the world. So I'm going to screen share. This is the second time I've done this with this particular Feldenkrais Summit. I have to first share screen, and then I have to, come on, where are you? Okay, now I have to turn on the sound and the share and get out of here, this part. And this part, oops. I had this all set up for you before I pulled these stories in. Don't save. Here we are. This is Future Life Now, Move Better, Feel Better Summit 2022.
My name is Lavinia Planka, and I'm one of the co-hosts for the summit. And today we're talking about self-image. And self-image has so many different connotations that really change a lot as we go through life. Everything from the idea of self-esteem to the sense of my body map to how I perceive myself and am perceived in the world. So I have the honor of interviewing Linda Tellington, who was actually in the very first Feldenkrais training in the 1970s with Moshe Feldenkrais, and who has gone on to become internationally known for her work with animals, doing something that she calls T-Touch, or the Tellington T-Touch, and has managed to integrate the Feldenkrais method into her own unique way of helping people and animals feel better and move better. So Linda, welcome. It's so nice to see you.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure for me to share with the Feldenkrais community.
So it's interesting because our subject that we're going to be talking about today is our self-image as we age. Mm-hmm. And, you started studying with Moshe Feldenkrais back in the 70s. So there was the youthful and then all of these years that have gone by. So if you went back in time right now, you go back into the Wayback Machine and you're there lying on the floor and doing this work, can you speak about how Moshe's work influenced you at that time and how that carried you through?
Absolutely. So when I joined the training in 1975 in July, I was already internationally known in the horse world. And I came to the training thinking that I would use this amazing method to help my riding students improve their athletic ability and recover from injuries that it's really common in the horse world to have. And in the second day, and of course I have to say, never thought that I was doing it for myself. And of course I have to say, I'm 85 and I wouldn't look like this. I couldn't move like this if I hadn't done that 4-year training with Moshe. So in the second day of the training, there were 63 of us lying on the floor at the Humanistic Psychology Institute in San Francisco. And Moshe made a statement that changed my life with animals. And that is, he made the statement to the effect that for a human, it's possible to learn in one experience by with these gentle non-habitual movements that would activate new neural pathways to actually give us more capacity for learning. And when he said that, I remember lying there, we were doing an awareness to movement exercise, and it's like my ears pricked up like a horse, and I thought, if this is true for a human, it's got to be true for a horse. And I thought, wait a minute, what can I do with a horse that would be a movement that that horse would not make himself, that would activate new neural pathways that would enhance learning? So that very afternoon, I went out and I called a friend who had just imported Arabian mare from Montana like 2 months before. She'd never been ridden. She was a broodmare. And she had a problem. And that was that you had to chase her around to catch her every day to bring her in to feed her. It's not logical, but that was her habit. So he chased her around, caught her up, brought her to me. And I'm standing there, I remember looking at this horse and thinking, now, one of the things you have to understand, Lavinia, at that point, for 15 years, I'd already been doing a form of body work on horses. It's what I learned from my grandfather, who was very successful in the racehorse business. But it never crossed my mind that you could actually affect the behavior of a horse by work on the body. It was simply to help them recover after hard work. So, and we had already written a book and shown exercises like circling the legs. That was the big thing, that one of the things we were doing. And so I'm standing there looking at this horse and I'm thinking, okay, so what if I take this leg and I move it with awareness, instead of just like doing a circle to help to lengthen the stride? What if I just move this and imagine that this, you know, horse is feeling this in a different way? So I took the tail and I thought, well, I can move the tail in a different way. And okay, well, I can take the head and just move it. And we did certain things with horses' heads that helped them be more flexible, but not from the place of awareness. And I thought, okay, I can move the ears. And I did that, just exploring to see what would happen. I did it about 15 minutes. There were several people watching me and they thought I had hypnotized the horse because she was so quiet. So you know how it is when you're exploring, you don't know what happened. So I ended, they turned the horse out. And the next morning, the owner called me and he said, okay, Linda, I don't know what happened, but when I went to catch this horse to feed her, as I always do, instead of having to chase her, she waited at the gate. Okay. I led her into the stable, into the stall, and instead of going for the hay in the corner, that would be logical, she just stood there like, do something. I thought, holy mackerel, one session. And that horse changed the behavior. And she was 16 years old. And that's when every day, like after class, our classes went till 4 in the afternoon in San Francisco, I would go into the Woodside area where I was from before and work on horses with various problems. And so in the beginning, we were just looking for how can we move that horse, first of all, in these ways that the horse couldn't move themselves. And we came up with all kinds of things that summer, and it was really fantastic. And so over the next years, I integrated the Feldenkrais work with what I've been doing for years with students, and it was very successful. I want to go on from that and talk about how I look like this today at 85. And one of the many huge influences that Moshe had on me was at the end of our first year, he recommended that we read a book called Man on His Nature by Sir Charles Sherrington. And I was sitting in Germany, because that's where I'd been working and living, and just going to San Francisco for the summers for the training. And so I'm reading this book, and in the second chapter, Sir Charles Sherrington, who was a Nobel Prize recipient, wrote in such a totally passionate way that every cell in the body knows its function in the body. And he described in these like very inspiring ways, if you get cut yourself, how the body rallies to heal it. And I'm sitting there, Lavinia, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, we had seen Moshe the summer before work with a young woman who was, I think she was 28, and she'd had a stroke and was certainly limited. And in 20 minutes, Moshe changed her life. And I'm thinking, they're reading this book, we don't yet know how to do this. So when I don't know yet how to do with this beautiful Feldenkrais work, what Moshe did, all I have to do is say, wait a minute, if every cell in the body knows its function in the body, all I have to do is say, cells, just remind this body, these cells in this body, of their potential for ideal function. And I started seeing the body as a collection of amazing intelligence. And that's what really inspired me as I was learning and doing and practicing all this amazing work that we can do with the Feldenkrais method. It's just mind-blowing. I was seeing the body as this collection of cells and of intelligence. And so what happened to me from when we graduated in 78 until 1983, that's what we were doing, is sharing Feldenkrais and with my work with horses and people. In 1983, so I have to go back actually, because one of the reasons that I'm sitting here like I am is due to a gift that I got for my 30th birthday. And I had seen an advertisement in the San Francisco Chronicle that stated for $5, you could receive one of the first computer-generated astrological predictions of your life. So I sent away for my birthday, and I got it. And one of the things, it was like 98 pages of mimeographed information folded in this nice little booklet tied with a ribbon. So one of the things that this booklet said is that in my lifetime, I would develop a form of communication that would spread around the world. And in order to do so, I would have to learn to trust my intuition. And so I immediately went to our library. My first husband was 20 years older than I, Wentworth Dillington, and he had a very big library of science and spirituality. And I pulled the book down that stated that intuition is unlearned knowledge. Today, we understand that as it's information in the quantum field. But I just got that. And so, okay, start to just trust your intuition. What does that mean? And so I followed, you know, I've been following that for a long time. And so in 1983, I was working on another very difficult horse at the Delaware Equine Veterinary Clinic. And this horse belonged to the vet, and they knew that I was doing Feldenkrais with horses, and they asked me if I would look at this horse, because she didn't want to be groomed. If you'd come with a grooming bucket and a brush, like, she'd pin her ears or threaten to kick or snap her teeth when she went to be saddled. If she were a human, I would say this horse was suffering from fibromyalgia, because she was sensitive everywhere, and they couldn't diagnose it, because in those days they didn't have what veterinarians have today. They only x-rayed from the knees and hocks down, nothing like all the wonderful work that's available today. So anyway, I just put my hands on her, like, very quietly, just to give her a sense of that I wasn't going to hurt her, I wasn't going to do something. And she got really quiet. And her owner said, okay, Linda, like, what's your secret? Why is this horse not threatening you? And I said, intuitively, don't worry what I'm doing. Just go up and put your hands on the shoulder and just push, I said, push the skin in a circle. And when I said that, Lavinia, I thought, okay, what does that mean? Is that not something we'd ever done with a horse before? But I didn't tell her. I didn't know what I was talking about. And she went up and just gently moved the skin. And then she did another one and another one. And the horse just stood there quietly. And in that moment, I thought, it takes years to learn this wonderful Feldenkrais work. I want to start following those circles. And so that's what I did. And in those days, I was giving, you know, big clinics with 100 people working with the horses in the way that I did. And I started showing them these circles. And and the first one was in July, actually, of 83, and in California. And a woman came up to me after and she said, you know, I have this at my this thing on my wrist, I forget now what they're called, and also on my foot. And I'm a massage therapist and I can't stand on it and it hurts me. I said, well, I don't know if it's going to help her, but I know it won't hurt you. And so she did these little round circles on this, trying to think what the heck you call it. It's this little thing that pops up. Anyway, she called me a couple of weeks later and it was gone. And she was able to stand and do her work. Thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And then someone else called me and said, you know, I went home and I showed my husband what I learned for the horse. And he said, well, my back is hurting. Well, nah. And she did these little circles. And that's how it kind of started. And what has happened over the years, what we've discovered is by moving the tissue, actually moving the skin in a circle and a little more. In the beginning, it was just a circle. But if you try it, those of you who are listening, if you like catch the skin, and I'll use my middle finger as the starting point, the other fingers just fall. And I actually make 5 quarter circles. So I'm going to imagine, first of all, a face of a clock. And that's an important part of this for success, because whenever you imagine the face of a clock, on this imaginary clock, I'm going to put 6 o'clock toward the ground if I were, you know, standing. So I start with my middle finger at 6, and just try this on your one hand. And I move skin like in a little arc from 6, 7, 8, 9, 9 to 12. Look how my fingers strain, 12 to 3. And then I curve back to 6. I'm actually doing the middle, and I go up to 9. So it's 1 1/4. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing about that, if you have a pain somewhere, and you know, talk about the image of aging, as you know, at many ages, you wind up with that little, maybe you've injured yourself somewhere, and you can actually do these 1 1/4 circles. And interesting, you can either really reduce that pain or disappear it. And I'm going to show you as we go along some of the other things you can do with this. Now, so it was really interesting what has led me to just like keep following this path. So what we discovered is, wow, you get an injury, just do these little circles on it. And like I said, you can really reduce it or disappear it. And we have a very logical part of this is we use a pressure from 1 to 10. Now, why am I talking so much about this? Because as you age, you get all kinds of stuff that goes on, you know, you hurt your back and you can fix it yourself. Let me just show you something. How many of us wind up with back stuff? So you can take the side of your hand like this, put it wherever that is, take your other hand and imagine the space of the clock and go in whichever direction feels best to you. That will vary from person to person. I'm putting my middle part here on, and I start 1¼ circles. And I can do 1¼ or add a little lift to it. And then back down to where I started. If you have chronic pain, you'll do this 1¼ and go back to the 6. It's like one and a quarter, pause, and a quarter back. It's so funny. I mean, you think, are you kidding? But you know what? You always have your hands. That's what's so interesting. And what we discovered also, and again, you know, we have all kinds of fears as we age. Who knows where they come from? Sometimes they're not our own. But what we've discovered is that you can really reduce those fears. And one of the ways is, I'm going to show you one of the, what we call the magic 3 T-touches. And we're going to do it, call it a T-touch heart hug. And you imagine this face of the clock. You know, we all have those clocks in the school. You take off the wall and put here. I don't know what's going to happen, Lavinia, to when you get these digital clocks. We don't have this circle. That's a problem. So we take this circular clock, put it here. And your 6 o'clock will be toward the ground. Now, you can hold your hand however it's comfortable for you, but we start off by cupping. And I'm just going to catch like any place that's easy. Make sure you don't flatten your hand, because if you flatten your hand, you tighten your muscles. No, cup it and just catch a little bit. Take a nice deep breath. And I'm going to start by going to the right clockwise. So I catch one point and I scoop it up from 6 up to 9. 12, take a deep breath. 3, 6, 9. Another deep breath and smile. Just pause a moment. Now try the other direction. For some, the other will be preference. So I catch whatever is easy there. And I take 6 up to my imaginary 3. 12, 9, 6, 3. Take a nice deep breath and pause. Now, you can be really feeling stressed, or you can be feeling like really uneasy and do like, just like, a few moments like this. And from the studies that we've done, what we discovered, when you're in that place of stress, it's the sympathetic nervous system is in control. Your fight, freeze, faint, fool around. But what we discovered from imagining that clock and moving around the face of this clock, that you activate the forebrain instead of the amygdala. And it puts you in that quiet place of the parasympathetic, which is the ideal state for learning. And so this is, we have shared this in just countless places around the world, because the Telling to T-Touch in these simple forms is now in 39 countries that we know of with our teachers and through my books. So this is one of the ways that we're all nowadays. Almost everybody I know is pretty stressed, and just taking like a couple of minutes and doing this. And when you do, give thanks to Moshe for turning me on to this amazing concept of Sherrington and cell intelligence, because it goes beyond this. What I discovered that has to do with these cell stuff is it's this book. actually the next book that I've been very influenced by books in my life. And the next book that really turned me on to the concept of cell intelligence, because this is what we're going to get to for your image and your aging. What I want to point out is that you, each one of you, us, is a miracle. And why do I say that? Because think about it. And that I started thinking about it thanks to Bruce Lipton's book, Spontaneous Evolution, and his amazing chapter on cells that talks about the communication between the cells. And there you come back to my thing, I would develop a form of communication that would spread around the world. This T-touch, this telling to T-touch, is a form of communication with your cells. And when you actually move the tissue in this 1¼ circle, it's like taking a key and connecting into this brilliance in every cell in our body that knows its function. And in Bruce Lipton's book, Spontaneous Evolution, where he talks about the amazing communication and connection between all the cells. And he writes this book on the basic premise, if we human beings could learn to cooperate with each other as our cells do in order to be in a state of fitness, of ideal function, we would have a different planet.
Wow, you've just spoken about so many things, and and you've opened up a whole lot of questions for me, if you don't mind me asking.
Love it.
Questions so that you can take a breath, Linda. First of all, you know, your energy is inspiring. You know, but I was thinking to myself that so many of the principles that are in the Feldenkrais method in some ways are encapsulated in your discovery, right? Because certainly this is a non-habitual movement, right? It's Absolutely. A way, it's a way of interrupting our habitual process, number one. Number two, I'm assuming that we want to use a certain kind of awareness as we're doing it. We're not just, you know, walking around mechanically doing it the way I would be making my coffee, but I'm giving some kind of loving attention to myself as I'm doing this circle. And even the sort of potentially ritualistic quality to the fact that it goes 1¼ as opposed to just one forces us to be paying attention and not just making circles in our skin. So these ideas of paying attention to ourselves and connecting with ourselves is inherent in that work. And you know, when you were talking about the hug, the heart hug, all I could think about was, you know, how the hand itself, the hand has so many sensory connections connecting right to the heart center of ourselves. You know, we pledge our loyalty, we profess our love, we connect hand to heart all the time. Yep. And if you're feeling fear or stressed, you know, and you bring your hand to your heart in that way, it changes your breathing as well, because our breath is very much connected to our relationship to fear. So I'm getting to a point here, and that is, we have a belief system in this country, or in this universe, perhaps, or this reality, that aging, you know, that certain things happen to you as you age, that there's a certain decrepitude that happens. And even though we know so far that no one gets out of here alive, mm-hmm. what you're saying to us is that we can have a quality of life if we have a different relationship with the idea of self-image. That I don't have to buy in to the traditional idea of self-image. And what you're offering us are tools to bring our awareness to the potential in ourselves and in ourselves. Does that make sense?
Totally. And the fact is that part of that is learning to love ourselves. And one of the this little book, which is called Ho'oponopono. It's one of the many books on Ho'oponopono. It's by Ulrich Dupré. It's U-L-R-I-C-H and then capital D-U-P-R-E-E. The reason I bring this up is you mentioned loving ourselves. Most people, or many, many people, have a really hard time with that concept. Hold on, I have to have a drink. And part of this process of accepting ourselves as we are is forgiving ourselves and forgiving our bodies when they're not as perfect as they were. But that's just the start. Then the question is, what do you do about it? And what are the reasons that I'm able to function? Of course, I couldn't be like this without that 4 years of Feldenkrais. And detach when I get a pain. But I also couldn't be like this if I didn't have a spiritual belief that that it's okay to love ourselves. And for those who, this little book, this concept of Ho'oponopono, for those who have been raised that it's not okay to love yourself, in the terms of forgiveness, learning this Ho'oponopono has four parts, and I want to share this with you all. And you can Google it anywhere. There are, by the way, Ulrich Dupré has a regular weekly YouTube session that anybody can listen to, and you can donate whatever you want. He's amazing. But so this concept of Ho'oponopono is part of who I am today and why I look like this. And it's just like four simple basic phrases for whatever happens in your life, or somebody's done something to you or part of you that you don't like. It's for yourself, forgive yourself, for please forgive me for not honoring this amazing body. please forgive me. Oh, here I am. I'm just getting blank. There are four parts. This is really funny. Anyway, it's basically, please forgive me. Thank you for forgiving me. And I love you. I'm missing one, but these are the important parts. And most people, Lavinia, can't say I love you to themselves. But my belief is that when I recognize that every cell in this body knows its function in the body, we're talking about divine intelligence, source intelligence, universal intelligence. So I can honor that, and I can love that about me for those who grew up not having support.
You know, Linda, you just reminded me, and I don't know if you remember this, but in one of the collections of Moshe Feldenkrais's Awareness Through Movement lessons, he has a lesson called something like an elementary lesson in learning to love yourself. Do you remember that lesson?
We didn't get that one.
Well, but it's in one of the collections, but guess what? You know what that lesson is? It's about caressing yourself in standing. So, you know, so you were on the same page in a way. He was using this idea of touch. Of course, he was using it talking about how we never touch ourselves, how we don't connect with ourselves, but he was also using that to help people be able to bend better and reach better, and using the concept of caress to misdirect their attention a little bit. But still, it's just so interesting that you're talking about loving yourself. Yeah. And that was really one of Feldenkrais's messages, right? That it's about being able to stand in your own self-esteem, your own integrity, by being more functional. So in so many ways, you've just continued on and taken this work further in your own inimitable handwriting.
Well, as Moshe said, I mean, it was in our first year that he said, don't necessarily do just what I do, develop your own fingerprints. That was one of the strong messages.
That's right.
And it's so beautiful how so many people have taken it on exactly as he taught. Well, it can't never be exactly as Moshe taught, but in his stead. And yet how many have brought so many. I mean, I see Feldenkrais in many, many other modalities where it's not necessarily even recognized. Absolutely. Or acknowledged. No. So I'm going to stop this right now. I'm going to stop the share because I want us to have a few minutes to make any comments any comments or what this brings up for you. And then next week, we'll finish the rest. Thoughts, comments, questions. Megan, I see you making a move.
I'm here, but I just have to make a comment that I watched that as much of that interview as I was able to keep my eyes open because you know how I am. But originally, I watched it on the celebration, and I was so inspired by it, by your description of two things. One of how you, because I had heard that you took this horse that before you were, you know, fully a T-touch, began T-touch, and that you got this horse to come in and not have to. I have a horse that I haven't been able to catch for 6 years. He's my rescue. And so that night, after last, whenever I watched it the first time, I went down and I mean, he comes in to be fed. He'll come in his stall. But in the morning, when you go to put his fly mask on and fly spray, he goes, runs out the door in the back and can't, you know, he doesn't want to be caught. So we got him and I just stood there and just tried little different things like what you were talking about, which I had never heard to such specificity until I watched your interview. And sure enough, he's getting better. And I mean, I'm not you, so I haven't got it, so he'll change him in 24 hours, but I am working on things with him that he's starting to be very affectionate. Again, I mean, he goes, you know, in phases. It's been 6 years, but but anyway, so I'm hoping this winter that I can go in the stall, we're not worrying about the flies and such, and you know, groom him a bit and love him up and do some T-touch on him and see how I can bring him around better. But so that hearing that story in such detail was just great for me. Thank you. And the other thing was, and I know you showed us this in this class, was because I do have a back issue, L4 and L5, that spondy thing. And what you showed, and I think Angela's gotten this, obviously she must have gotten it, but I didn't realize, and you showed it and I could see it right on the screen. And so I understand how to do that so much better now from watching that. And anyway, so that interview was great for me. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. That's fantastic. And often I think we're used to learning, you know, from watching videos. And I think there's something just like being here focused as we are on Zoom. I think it's easier to get sometimes to pick up concepts because we don't have all the other energies going on, all the stuff going on, all the distractions going on around us, like when we're in a room. So thank you. Valentina, thank you.
This is more by way of an observation that I probably sense every time I see you, but because you were talking about aging and your age and what informs that, I think I always notice that a great quality you have is the taking of delight in so much, so many things, and things, little things, like when you talk to us about you and Roland, turning to each other at night to say three things in the day that for which you're grateful and that kind of thing, that you fill yourselves with delight or light that is generated by appreciation. And I know you talk about gratitude a lot, but I find with you, it's even expanded to an aesthetic appreciation. It's a cellular, soul deep appreciation countless times a day. It's very inspirational to me about you. Little things that people might not find wondrous, but you do. Look at that spider. Wow, he's missing a leg, but he's still going, or anything. And that is your secret of youth. I love it.
Thank you so much. That reminds me of a spider. There was a big spider. It was that big in our living room a couple of nights ago. And it looked like it could have been a brown recluse. It was like that big.
Brown recluses are little.
Okay. Well, anyway, so I put a glass over it and then put a piece of cardboard under it so we could have it in the glass and take a picture of it. And then we looked it up and then we carefully put it outside. We couldn't identify it. And then I woke up in the middle of the night and I realized I'd put it in the grass. And what are you going to do with eight legs in the grass? And our grass is like, they stick up. It's not a smooth surface. And I was really worried. I went out, but I couldn't find it the next morning. So somehow I managed to get back. And I thought, why didn't I just put it, like on the sidewalk or on the wall or something? But it's true. And it's my, isn't that just delight? It's the delight. I get to look out and I see the palms just waving here and the trees along the canal. And if I didn't have that, I would have pictures of it on the wall. It's just like, I can't have this. I can't have this guy, in living, breathing, but it's the same to me. And he brings so much delight. And I'm telling you, if any of you don't have somebody like this that has been attracted you, it's worth finding somebody. But they bring a lot of delight. I like that, delight. And I have to tell you something. I couldn't remember that fourth element of the Ho'oponopono. And I realize after it's the two words, I'm sorry. And actually, when it's told in a workshop by the Hawaiian, his name at the moment I can't remember, look at your friends.
It's a hedgehog.
Oh, I can't tell. Isn't he? Oh, yes. Oh, very nice. So when it's taught in a Ho'oponopono class with Dr. Liu, he leaves off the part, I'm sorry. You don't say that. It's please forgive me. It's like usually it's I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. That's how most of the books have it. But he leaves off the I'm sorry. It's please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And that concept, I find so few people are able to say I love you to themselves. And I never would have understood it if it hadn't been for the translation. I wouldn't have understood that loving the divine within us if I hadn't heard the translation from Lisa Light from the French. It was originally written in French, and it's the one by Dr. Boudin, Luc Boudin, and two other people. So, look at all these kitties there up here. Any other comments before we end? We'll take one more, and then we'll continue this and finish the rest of it next time. Any other thoughts that this brought up for you, Marnie and Teresa, then? Marnie, are you searching for your unmute?
Well, Teresa is ahead of me.
Oh, okay. I didn't see you. I only saw your beautiful thing first. So, Teresa.
Okay, thank you. So I just wanted to say I'm waiting for the second part of this interview, and you are for me an ongoing inspiration, and the inspiration also to read a lot, to have this confirmation, and this makes really a big difference also in my world. And the tea touch is really, it's amazing. Thank you.
Blessing. Marnie.
And actually, I'm going to add this. This is not why I raised my hand. And your curiosity is such a, is such a part of your vitality. And anyway, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about, I put celebration on the beginning, but also there's a meet and greet, celebration meet and greet on the 9th, which is Sunday, I guess, with right. You and Ron. And I didn't know if you wanted to put that on the chat also.
I think that's for the presenters, isn't it?
For the what?
Presenters.
Well, it went out to me today, Linda, so I've received that.
It went to everybody, I think, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's I wasn't sure. So the fact is it's going to be fun, and it's a way of testing and sharing. And I mean, it's a big deal that Robin and Mandy have done there. They're trying to do on, they're planning, not trying, they're doing on their own without a big backup professional crew, like most of these, you know, this, I mean, to work with Cynthia in that interview that I did, she is so experienced, and the setups they had, I mean, she advised me to go out, and I have right here this little Roku thing cost me $400, and I still haven't figured out how to use it. and just the, you know, the expertise and the experience that they've had for years is amazing. And Robin and Mandy are just doing an amazing job, I think, of putting this together. And you are going to be so delighted with the presenters that they're, you know, our concept, our interest is to find out and support all the ways that other people have integrated tea touch into their lives. So this is not just about, you know, those who just do tea touch. It's really interesting information and integration. And I have something for you all. I have to get permission to show it, but I'm certain it's okay for our group. And it's the class that's taught in Berlin, and they just started a new class with 20 people, and 4 of those people are behavioral veterinarians. And she sent me, yes, every day there's just a very short, has to be under 5-minute presentation by one of the participants in the class, and they do a video of showing one tea touch or with and work with their dogs. And it's a vet from France who has written a book, and it's very highly liked. And he has taken a client dog as one of his test subjects, and this is a dog who came to him as a behavioralist, and just the dog could never ever be still, just flipping out, and the woman wanted a lap dog, And in this beautiful way, this guy shows how the dog is at first. I mean, he's literally like turning upside down. It looks like his ADD issue. And literally in a few minutes and explaining the T-touches as he's going, the dog gets completely peaceful. And then he guides his client he did a few T-touches on her and then showed her basically what to do. And then the dog is the same way for her. So it's just really, it's beautiful to think, and those vets are going to be, you know, these are vets that do a lot of workshops, conferences rather. So it's really a great thing for getting the T-touch work out and making it available, you know, to people to integrate in the way that they find it helpful. That's end for today. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for witnessing my ability to swim, which I totally thought would never, ever happen in this lifetime. And hey, Ava, like, congratulations. You can give us some examples, right? You can do little things for us. That will be great. Blessings, everyone.
Oh, Linda, just a question.
Bye. Yes.
Do we have our lesson at the Saturday night?
Yes.
Saturday? Is it the same hour?
10.
It's 10, so it is 7 o'clock p.m. for us. Sorry, right. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, you're welcome. We do it at 10 on Saturday because that means Eleanor can go kayaking with Steve or, you know.
Okay.
Do.
It's this Saturday, not the 15th.
8th.
Wait, let me look on my calendar. I can't tell you. I'm pretty sure it is, but
I have written this Saturday. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the 15th, Anna, will be the part of the at the celebration.
Celebration. Oh, right.
Right. Right on.
Uh-huh. Super. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed.
Bye. Bye. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Bye.
Aloha.
Aloha.
In the recording.
Aloha.
Yep.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.